Sending out a big warm greeting to everyone who's tuned to this fabulous station this afternoon, males, females, young and old, and especially to all those hard-working parents out there. I've placed extra emphasis on parents because I acknowledge the additional challenges you face on a day-to-day basis, trying to keep up with the needs and demands of your little and not so little ones, a task that can physically and mentally push you to your limits many times. I think every parent will agree that parenting is a job unlike any other, and it often feels like no matter how good a parent you are, how patient you are, how accommodating you are, how experienced you are, and how professionally qualified you are, nothing can really prepare you for the challenges of parenthood, of which there are many. From the day they come into the world, we fuss and worry over every aspect of their existence. Are they eating well? Are they sleeping well? Are they happy? Are they sick? And the list goes on and on. At every stage of their development, we find there's something we are worrying or stressing about. The first year of a child's life is a mix of chronic sleep deprivation, panic, and priceless moments of love and affection. But in my personal opinion, that first year is a bit of a grace period, a bit like the calm before the storm, a time for you to adjust to your new role as a provider and carer of this tiny new life that is likely to be dependent on you for the greater part of the next two decades. A time for you to really harvest as much patience as you can possibly before your calm, rosy life is sent into a tailspin as your child reaches the exciting but testing milestone called toddlerhood. It's a stage of development so challenging that many parents have argued it's harder than raising a teenager. And to a certain degree, I can agree. Especially when I recall some of the temper tantrums my son had as a toddler. Like those frustrating, embarrassing meltdowns in the middle of the supermarket that made me want to sink into the ground. A scenario that most toddler-toeing parents can definitely relate to. My heart has started racing just thinking about those experiences, and so my heart really goes out to parents who are currently facing this patience testing phase. Having repeatedly wished for someone to guide me through those unrelenting toddler tantrums and not knowing where to turn to or who to ask for help at the time, I know that when you finally find that person, you want to take all the advice you can get from them. But it's not always easy to find that person, and when you do, sometimes your pride may get in the way of you going to see them. So being the caring, empathetic person that I am, and being a fellow parent who knows all about tantrums, I've decided to bring the expert to you, to guide you and give you the bundles of reassurance that I'm sure you all crave right now. That person is clinical psychologist, co-founder of the Raising Children Network website and CEO of the Parenting Research Centre, Warren Cann, and he'll be loading you up with lots of practical advice and heartwarming reassurance to get you through those notorious toddler tantrums. That's after the break. Do stay tuned. Thank you.
every stage of a child's development, we find both joy and frustration. And most parents will agree that one of the most challenging early childhood stages is toddlerhood, a time of self-discovery, increasing independence, and of course, temper tantrums. By far the most dreaded part of having a toddler, these temper tantrums bewilder, frustrate, and embarrass us beyond what words can describe, and often induce feelings of complete and utter helplessness. For all those parents who've passed and survived this phase, this episode unfortunately has come a little too late for you. But for new parents and parents-to-be, you may come to thank me for the advice I have lined up for you, or more correctly, the advice that Warren has lined up for you. A clinical psychologist and CEO of the Parenting Research Centre, Warren Cann, is just the man to give you the kind of advice that is likely to help you survive the infamous toddler tantrums with both your sanity and dignity intact. Warren, good afternoon, and thank you for taking the time to be on the program.
Thank you for having me, and I think you have nailed the issue very well with your introductory comments.
Thank you very much. Now, just before we get into toddlers and tantrums, I'm curious to find out what you do at the Parenting Research Centre. It sounds like a very fascinating job you have there.
Oh, yes, it is. And I've been in the CEO role now for about 16 years.
Oh, wow.
The role of the centre is to support organisations and practitioners who have a role in supporting parents. So we focus on translating the science of parenting and child development into useful strategies that parents can use, and also in strategies that the people who work with parents, like nurses, like doctors, like psychologists and other people who work in community and family services, we help them work more effectively with parents. But one of the things that we do that your listeners may be very interested in is that we, together with our partners at the Murdoch Children's Research Institute, we provide the Raising Children Network website, which is Australia's government-funded parenting information website.
So, Warren, we've all heard the phrase, kids don't come with an instruction manual, and that's never more prominent than during the toddler years. Not yet old enough to communicate effectively or know what's good for them, but just old enough to know what they want and when they want it. Toddlers and their behaviour can be very challenging for parents to understand, especially when it comes to something like temper tantrums. So, to help us decode this highly frustrating behaviour, what can you tell us, perhaps theoretically, about what's going through a toddler's mind when they're having a tantrum? In other words, what's the psychology behind a tantrum?
Look, that's a really good question to start with, and I think you've kind of touched on the origins of tantrums when you talk about toddlers and their growing need for independence.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get into that, let's just take a second to talk about what a tantrum actually is.
Yes.
Because they do come in all sorts of shapes and sizes. And I think it's important that we're all kind of talking or thinking about the same thing when we are thinking about how best to manage tantrums.
That's right.
So tantrums, by definition, have a anger or frustration component. So they've got an emotion which is typically about being angry, and that it typically is about being thwarted in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Anger can be a normal, healthy reaction to a situation.
Yeah.
The thing that turns anger into a temper tantrum is the disorganized behavior that might go along with the feeling of anger. And so that's why we might refer to a tantrum as, you know, a meltdown or losing it.
Yeah.
It's when a child becomes so angry that they kind of lose control, inverted commas, of their behavior. And that's where screaming or flailing or, you know, kicking out or dropping to the floor or holding your breath.
Yes.
These can all be disorganized behaviors which are associated with a temper tantrum. Now, why do toddlers have temper tantrums? Well, temper tantrums occur in the intersection between a child's growing need for autonomy and their ability or their skills in handling their emotions and handling social situations.
Okay.
So toddlers are becoming more aware of what they want. They want to have a bigger say in what happens to them and what they do. But what they don't have is the skills to handle those situations in a socially kind of acceptable way. And so when they get hit by these emotions, then they become, I guess, overwhelmed by them. And that's what leads to this upsetting and distressing behaviour and this very disorganised behaviour. Does that make sense?
Yes. So tantrums are basically a response to a child not really being in tune with their own emotions.
Right. Well, they're experiencing the emotion hot and strong, but they haven't yet developed the skills to handle that emotion. Now, what we see is as children develop, particularly as they develop verbal skills, you tend to see a natural reduction in temper tantrums because children now have a way of expressing their feelings. Yeah. They're more skillful in being able to achieve what they want and in influencing their environment, so they don't need to rely on tantrums as much.
Now, can frequent tantrums be a sign that a child may have a behaviour disorder or perhaps lacks discipline?
Okay, and you know what? Tantrums are one of those things in children that can often be seen to reflect badly on a parent's parenting, isn't it?
Right.
You can just see now, you know, the disapproving looks of the, you know, strangers passing you in the, you know, in the shopping aisle while your child's doing, you know, a blowfly on the floor.
That's right.
You know, buzzing around and kicking. Yes, it's one of those things, and yet it's a major misconception because tantrums, particularly in young children, particularly in toddlers, is so frequent that we would think of it as a normal developmental stage. In fact, 90% of toddlers will occasionally throw temper tantrums. And because children are different, temper tantrums will vary in how long and how dramatic they are. And knowing that a temper tantrum is a normal part of development in most cases, though, I mean, it might be reassuring to some level, but it doesn't necessarily help. So I would say to parents, at any time you are feeling distressed or confused or not sure what to do, be assured you're not alone. You're not the only one who struggles with temper tantrums. And seek out some good help or some good advice or some good information to help you navigate this stage.
We'll talk to younger parents so you can feel more normal.
Exactly. I think that's really important. Now, does a temper tantrum indicate a bigger problem? Well, it may if temper tantrums are very frequent and very prolonged. If you were to talk to a mental health professional, they would ask about things like, obviously, the age of the child, because if temper tantrums continue well into primary school years, that could be indication that there's another issue there that needs to be thought about. If a temper tantrum is associated with aggression, so the child is hitting others or kicking out, or if there are other behaviour problems with the tantrum, like the child is, you know, very non-cooperative or maybe has a very low mood. Or one other thing that we would be looking for is whether or not the tantrums occur with non-parental adults.
Okay.
So if tantrums are very pervasive, that is, they're occurring not just at home with mum and or dad, but they're also occurring at kinder, at a childcare or at school or when the child's out with other adults, then that might indicate that there is another behavioural or emotional issue that might need some attention. And finally, I would say one thing to be on the lookout for is how long does it take for the child to recover from the temper tantrum?
Right.
And if children take a particularly long time to kind of calm down after a tantrum, that might indicate that they are, you know, struggling to regulate their emotions. So temper tantrums alone, no, if they're relatively infrequent and relatively brief, they are very much likely to be part of a normal development. But if they're associated with other kinds of issues, it might be worth exploring whether or not there are underlying emotional behavioural issues that might need to be thought about.
Yeah. Now, Warren, just like there are people who have this misconception that tantrums are associated with a lack of discipline, there are people who may think that these tantrums are occurring because there is not a sufficient amount of parental attention being given to this child, and therefore this child is acting out to get that attention that they crave. How much truth is there to this?
Yeah, so it's overly simplistic to say that a tantrum is just a sign that a child is getting insufficient attention. It's just another theme in the sort of parent blame game. Having said that, when we're thinking about how do we create the conditions to help children learn more appropriate, more socially acceptable, more effective ways of dealing with their emotions and dealing with situations, then it is worth asking ourselves, how does our child earn our attention? Mm. Now, one trap that parents can fall into is the kind of, they can often end up feeling like they're tiptoeing around on broken glass.
That's right.
You know, they don't want to do anything that could provoke a temper tantrum.
That's
and
right.
So what happens is that when their child is playing nicely or behaving well, that's the time when the parent sort of says, and sort of, you know, rubs their forehead and gets busy doing their own thing.
Yes.
And then it's not until the child begins to act in a disruptive way or a negative way that suddenly the parent finds themselves needing to respond. So we do need to be careful about patterns of attention.
Yes.
And I think it's almost always worthwhile looking to change that pattern so that children are earning our attention when they're behaving well, when they're doing things that we like,
yeah,
and not just when they're behaving badly. In fact, as a rule of thumb,
yeah,
I'd be aiming for, you know, 5 positive interactions for every 1 negative.
Oh, wow.
So if you've got that kind of ratio going, then you're going to be doing really well. Don't be too hard on yourself,
yeah,
if there are some days where that's not possible. But aiming for sort of 5 positive interactions to every 1 interaction which requires us to correct the child or to scold the child or to have any kind of interaction like that, we try to keep the ratio around about 5 to 1.
Now, Warren, I guess with toddlers being so unpredictable much of the time, the best defence we have is being prepared for whatever they may throw our way. This involves predicting, in part, when they might unleash a round of their angry, screaming, crying, flailing tantrum sessions. So what can you tell us about some of the situations that are likely to trigger a temper tantrum?
Okay, well, I think you're also right to focus on prevention as much as possible, because tantrums are very hard to stop when they get underway.
Mm.
So I've got 4 tips for how you can reduce the frequency or the likelihood of tantrums occurring. Would you like me to go through those?
Oh, please do.
Okay. Well, the first thing to do to think about is, how can I promote my child's autonomy? Now, it's completely natural and healthy for a child to be seeking greater autonomy and independence in what they, you know, think, say, and do.
Mm.
So look for ways that you can give them that opportunity. One way you can do this is by offering choices. Choices provide, I guess, some parameters.
Mm.
You know, would you like to wear this dress or this dress? But it also gives the child the opportunity to exercise their own decision-making.
All right.
Secondly, try and create as predictable environment as you can. This is where routines are important, particularly important for toddlers.
Yeah.
A routine is when we do things in a similar order and in a similar way each day. It's not that we have to be, you know, exactly consistent every single day, but children are reassured and feel safe if, you know, the main activities in a day follow a routine.
Yes.
Like a routine around meal times and a routine around bedtime and a morning routine.
Yeah.
These routines help create a sense of safety and predictability. And when things are more predictable, they're less likely to provoke a temper tantrum.
Mm.
Thirdly, look for ways that you can reduce sources of stress and frustration.
Okay.
So, for example, whilst it might always be possible, go shopping with your toddler, you know, when they've had a good sleep, so that they're going to be at their best to be able to handle some of the stresses in a shopping trip. Look for ways that you don't have to give instructions. Don't ask your child to do something if it's not really important. Another way of saying this is, you know, pick your battles wisely.
Yeah.
Because each time you ask your child to do something or tell them that they can't do something,
yeah,
is potentially a trigger for a temper tantrum.
You're likely to be met with resistance as well.
Right. So if it's not important or it's not necessary, why risk the tantrum?
That's right.
And finally, and this goes to what I was saying earlier, so we don't need to labour this, but yeah, look to catch your child being good. If you feel like you might have got caught in that trap of only responding to your child or responding in a sort of a more intense way to a child when they're behaving badly, look to turn that around. Look to catch a child being good. And that's the time to stop what you're doing and go up to them and tell them how much you appreciate what they're doing, or even just look at what they're doing, talk to them about what they're doing, or hang out with them for a little while. Even short amounts of frequent attention can be a great way of encouraging a child, letting them know that you're really proud and happy with what they're doing.
That sounds like a plan, I guess.
Is that a plan?
That's a plan. Yeah. Now, Warren, toddlers and their tantrums are all different, and so are parents and their reactions. Some use the ignore it until it passes strategy, while others take a more hardline approach using warnings and threats. The million-dollar question is, what is the correct way to react and respond to a temper tantrum?
Wow. Wouldn't it be great if we all knew exactly the correct way?
It was the million-dollar question.
Exactly. I think it's a bit above my pay grade. But I think there are some things that we can say based on the science of what we know about child development, and also about what research says is effective in managing these kinds of behaviours. And it's true that no matter how careful you are, how organised, you know, how good your routines are, you are going to encounter a temper tantrum. And so you need to have some strategies up your sleeve. Now, that sort of alludes to the first thing. I think it's good to kind of be prepared, to have in your mind what you will do when a temper tantrum occurs. Because you're going to be more able to maintain or control your own emotions if you feel like you know what you're doing and you feel like you're sort of not just making it up here in the moment when the stress is greater.
That's right, especially when you're outdoors and, you know, all eyes are on you and waiting to see how you're going to respond.
Exactly. So the first thing I think that we need to be thinking about when tantrums actually occur is that this is an opportunity for learning. Now, sometimes I think we imagine that there is some dramatic intervention that will show the child once and for all that, you know, tantrums are not appropriate or they don't work. And I'm not sure that is a helpful way to think about it. It is better to think about this in the longer term. Yeah. As the child develops the skills, they won't need tantrums anymore. Mm. In the meantime, they may fall back into tantrums. So what we need to do in the meantime is to do whatever we can to make sure tantrums don't work. Yeah. So what that means is ensuring that children don't get what they want when they throw a temper tantrum. If we can ensure that temper tantrums are not effective, and at the same time we're encouraging a child in terms of learning new strategies, then we make it less likely that children will hang on to temper tantrums for a longer period of time.
Yeah.
So my suggestion here is that when a temper tantrum occurs, first of all, do your utmost to deal with it in a neutral and calm manner. You becoming upset will just feed into the situation and risk escalating the situation. So whilst we should be really enthusiastic and happy and dramatic when children are behaving well, when children are behaving negatively, this is the time to be neutral, to be calm, to speak calmly when we need to speak, and to try and avoid kind of feeding the escalation.
Okay.
Secondly, if you can, try and nip issues in the bud. If you can predict a tantrum, if you can see a child working up into a tantrum, and sometimes this is not always possible because some kids go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in like 30 seconds.
That's right.
But if you can, sometimes nipping something in the bud by, you know, being very clear, by giving the child instruction, by being very clear about what has to happen and why, you can sometimes stop irritation turning into a tantrum. But then ultimately, as I said, ensure tantrums don't work. So let me give you an example. If you're wanting to get your toddler out of the bath and they throw a tantrum because they don't want to come out of the bath, then they still should come out of the bath, you know, pick them up and take them out of the bath. This teaches the child that tantrums won't work.
Yeah.
And that's an example of what I mean. Do what you need to do to ensure that the temper tantrum is not effective. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
then?
So you're not rewarding their behaviour by giving in to what they want.
Right, and you're showing them this is not an effective way of dealing with their world. On the other hand, you know, if the child was asked nicely or to behave in a way that you like, you might say, okay, you can stay in the bath for another 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But a temper tantrum should signal, okay, there is no further opportunity for talking or negotiating. We are just going to do what we need to do here and just follow through with and make sure that happens. Now, in some situations, you might also find strategies like ignoring, like walking away from a temper tantrum, or a strategy like timeout can also be effective. But if you're going to use those strategies, it's worth doing a little bit of homework about how to use them well. So visit raisingchildren.net.au or get some good book or talk to somebody who you trust about how to make those strategies effective when you use them.
All right. Now, sometimes parents put up with temper tantrums believing that it's just a phase that their child is going through and they'll eventually grow out of it. And so they ride out these tantrums with little or no intervention. Are children likely to grow out of their tantrum throwing phase without any intervention? Is that a good approach to use?
Look, I think parents are right to think of this in developmental terms. So this is a phase or a stage in the child's development. It's not a signal that the child is bad or naughty or whatever. It's a sign of development. And the way through temper tantrums is through growth and development. Having said that, if tantrums prove to be an effective way of getting what you want, why would you give them up? And you might even know adults who have never given up temper tantrums.
That's right.
Because they have proven to be effective.
Mm.
So in almost all situations, we need to create an environment that does not reward tantrums inadvertently, but also creates the opportunity to learn your way out of temper tantrums.
Yeah.
And also I would say, just be conscious that this skill of self-regulation, which is what scientists call it, is something that children differ in terms of how long they take to develop those skills.
Yeah.
So some children just take longer to develop the self-regulation skills. And where that's the case, that can sometimes mean we need to be even more persistent and more consistent with them to help give them the opportunity to develop those new skills. And that's the luck of the draw, really.
Yeah.
If you happen to have had a child who's taking a little longer to develop self-regulation skills, it's not a reflection on you. It doesn't mean the child is bad. It's just like any other sort part of development. Children vary in how they develop.
Yeah.
And we need just to be sort of conscious and aware that children are different. And in some instances, we might need to be even more persistent and consistent.
And maybe we just need to spend a bit more time kind of developing their emotional literacy and getting them in touch with how they feel and what kind of alternative behaviour to tantrums could be used to help them express what they're feeling and ultimately get what they want.
Right, that's a very good point. And particularly in older children who have got more well-developed language skills, but even in toddlers, we could start to introduce the idea of using your words to express how you feel. Or when we can help children begin to learn and identify their emotions by putting labels on their emotions. I can see you're angry, I can see you're upset, and so on. Oh, I see you're sad, or I see you're happy. So there are lots of things that we can do, but also just keep in mind that for toddlers, sometimes the most effective way is to learn through experience rather than through explanation.
Mm.
But as children get older, and certainly as children get into primary school years, then we can begin to introduce anger management strategies to them, like ways of dealing with angry situations, things that they can say and do to help them manage feelings of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely very valuable as children get older.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, Warren, sometimes either in conjunction with or separate to temper tantrums, toddlers can develop some bad habits such as kicking, spitting, biting, or even using bad language. How should these behaviours be dealt with? I mean, are we going to treat it like a temper tantrum, or does it have a separate kind of line of defence?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I think it depends a lot on the function of those behaviours. If those behaviours are very similar to a temper tantrum in that they occur in situations where the child is frustrated or thwarted in some way, then yes, it's very likely that we could deal with them in a fairly similar way.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if we do have a cluster of these kinds of behaviours occurring together, and this kind of behaviour is occurring frequently, or it's causing distress in the family, then it could be another or a good reason to seek some advice from a professional and get some support in how best to help your child through this stage in their development.
That's right. And a reason I ask about this is because I've on occasion noticed the varying responses that people have to this kind of behaviour. I mean, I've seen some parents just tend to laugh it off, and I'm not sure if that is feeding the ego of that child by making them believe that they're doing something that's cute or funny. And then you have parents on the other extreme who react very violently or aggressively to it.
Yes, and I think as a general rule, that idea of trying to remain neutral, because you want to avoid inadvertently encouraging the behaviour by making light of it, or really by any sort of other antic, which is potentially a source of attention for behaviour that you really possibly are wanting to reduce attention for. And on the other side of the coin, even though you might be feeling angry and distressed, and you might feel tempted to try and cut this out by scolding or yelling or even smacking a child, what we know about these things is that they have risks, in that, you know, when you're really angry, there's always a risk, for example, of yelling or hitting louder or harder than what you intended.
Yeah.
And after all, these things don't really help children learn. I mean, if a child is more focused on being frightened of you, they won't be focused on learning how best to handle the situation. And so these kinds of reactions look effective at times because they are a surprise and then they kind of interrupt the child.
Yeah.
But generally they don't result in long-term learning. And they are very time-bound because after a while, you know, the shock or the surprise or that sort of element of those kinds of reactions tend to wear off.
That's right.
Still here we are left with temper tantrum.
That's right.
I think in these instances, we have to think of the long term, that ultimately children will, if you like, grow out of tantrums, inverted commas. If we create a long-term experience where tantrums are not rewarded, but effective, skillful behaviour is taught and rewarded over time. This is not something we can turn off like a tap.
Yeah, no. I think most parents have established that through experience. Now, many times, and having reached the end of their tether and feeling utterly frustrated with the fact that their child is not responding to their efforts, parents sometimes ask other adults who are around to scold the child for their bad behaviour, believing that perhaps the child may be intimidated into cooperating and behaving. What problems does this strategy present?
Yes, I mean, I think one of the things that this strategy can indicate is that the parent is feeling that the child is using this strategy deliberately and consciously, and it's simply a matter of making a different choice, and that's not really how things are. In a sense, the child is not exercising a choice when they throw a temper tantrum. They're doing what they can do in the situation.
Yeah.
So that's why I think it's more effective to focus on learning and how we can help them learn new skills over time, rather than looking for that dramatic intervention, that explanation, or that thing that I could say or somebody could say that will turn this around.
Yeah.
Like any habit that, you know, you think about it as a, even as an adult, like any habit that we've got into, we don't just turn it around just because somebody said so. It takes time to relearn the habit, learn a more effective way of dealing with the situation. So generally speaking, those things won't in the end be all that productive. Yeah, so best to focus on how can I help my child develop through this rather than what can I say that's going to make a difference.
Yeah. Now, as a way of encouraging good behaviour, and you've kind of touched on this here and there throughout our discussion, as a way of encouraging good behaviour, most child experts encourage parents to engage in positive reinforcement, a method that involves praising a child for their good behaviour and doing what is right. There are also parents who don't completely agree with this strategy, believing that a child shouldn't have to receive praise for doing what is right and conforming to what should be considered normal expectations. So, Warren, what's your take on this issue?
Yeah, what a great question. I mean, I think we need to be very cautious about should statements. You know, a should statement is statement about the way we would like the world to be. Okay. You know, you might say everyone should be polite, or everyone on the roads should be a good driver.
An idealized way of thinking.
Exactly. And often those idealized ways of thinking bear no resemblance to the world around us.
Okay.
I think parents are generally better served when they deal with the world as it is rather than the way they think it should be.
Okay.
So one thing that they could ask themselves here is, we did kind of touch on this, how does my child earn or get my attention? How do they successfully engage me? And if the answer to that is, my child routinely and successfully engages me around negative behavior, and when my child is behaving in ways that I appreciate, that I like, that are good for my child, they are not getting my attention, they might want to ask themselves, is that working for them?
Yeah.
And if it's not working for them, if things are stressful or if they are still concerned or distressed or embarrassed by their child's behaviour, then they might want to change that balance, where what they do is deliberately go out to spend time with, pay attention to, interact with, and praise their child when they're behaving in ways that they like. And then when they are behaving in ways that they think are ineffective or unhelpful or inappropriate, they look to minimise the level of engagement and attention they provide to those things and try that out and just see how that works for them.
That's right.
And I think what they'll find is that over time, gradually, the way that they interact with their child will change. They'll have a lot more positive interactions. And when it comes to having to have a negative interaction, like, say, a no, or possibly ask the child to do something that they don't want or whatever, they're kind of, there's sort of more money in the goodwill bank, you know, and those interactions then are more likely to go more smoothly.
Yeah.
And just also just keep in mind that even if you have some discomfort around the use of praise, and some of that I feel is a little bit overblown.
Yeah.
I mean, do you know anybody who feels like they get too much praise, like at work? You know, like, do you feel like you get too much positive feedback and that it's done you terrible harm? I'm yet to meet somebody who feels that way.
Yeah, that's right. I guess we tend to look at it from a perspective of that idealized thinking that you were talking about earlier. Warren, in the event that parents feel like they failed at every strategy, where can they turn to for additional support and advice?
So this is a really good place to finish on. You know, all parents who are caring for toddlers really need three sources of support. They need emotional support, you know, somebody who'll pat them on the back, tell them they're doing a good job, you know, be a good listener.
And a shoulder to cry on.
A shoulder to cry on. So find that, and it's particularly important in the toddler years. Maybe it's a first-time parents group, maybe it's a good friend, maybe it's a play group, maybe it's a neighbour.
Yeah.
But having people like that in your life, I think, is important as you navigate some of these more challenging phases in child development. The second thing is practical support. You know, like, you know, you need a break from it. You need to be able to, for example, from time to time, go shopping and not have to be worried about a toddler's temper tantrum. So having somebody who can look after the child, finding ways of giving yourself a break, I think is important. I mean, we often get so focused on kids, don't we, that we forget to look after ourselves. And I think caring for a toddler is a time when we should be paying extra careful attention to the job of recharging our own batteries, looking after ourselves as much as what we can. And then the third thing is information support. Now, there's lots of good information around. In fact, sometimes the challenge can be working out what information to pay attention to, what information to put into action. So I think a good starting point can be a website like raisingchildren.net.au. It's funded by the Australian government. It is evidence-based, and it provides a good starting point. Otherwise, there are lots of other resources around, not just on the internet. There are books, but there's also support through maternal and child health nurses, through community health centres. And something also to keep in mind is the parent line numbers that I think most states are now cover and now have a parent line where, you know, when push comes to shove and you're feeling really stressed out and you need to talk to somebody, contact your local parent line. That can be a good source of advice. And look, if you're really stuck, go and talk to your local GP, your family doctor. They can often give you ideas about where to start looking for assistance. And look, seeking out support when you need it is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign that you care about what you're doing. It's a sign that you're wanting to do your best, and it's a sign that you're really open and willing to learn on this, you know, tricky journey of parenting. So it's something to think of as a real positive and a real strength, and not as some kind of admitting on the failure as a parent.
That's right. I'm so glad you say that, Warren, because there are many, many parents who are very reluctant to ask for advice or to seek support because of that issue of being stigmatized or being judged as a parent who doesn't know how to control their child.
Absolutely. And I think it's one of the things that we are trying to get the message out there, that parenting is one of the most, you know, personally demanding tasks that we will do, in terms of the demand on our resources, our ingenuity, our patience,
our sanity.
our sanity. And that is true for everybody.
Yeah.
And then it can be particularly true, like it can even be more challenging, I guess, if you're raising a child who has got additional needs or complex needs.
Yes.
Or you are parenting in the context of, you know, personal and social adversity. If there's a lot of stress on you, that can put pressure on your parenting. And so it can be a great move for your child and also a great move for you to seek out and get support when you need it.
That's right. I think it will make the experience of being a parent and being a child a bit more pleasurable and tolerable for the both.
Absolutely.
Well, Warren, having reached the end of our discussion this afternoon, personally and on behalf of all frustrated parents out there, I'd like to thank you for the expert advice and reassurance you've given us regarding toddlers and their tantrums. It was a pleasure having you on the program.
Thanks so much.
Welcome back, everyone. You're still tuned to the Muslim Community Radio on 92.1 FM or 2mfm.org. And we've just heard from Warren Kan, a clinical psychologist and the chief executive officer of the Parenting Research Centre, who dissected toddler tantrums for us, explaining why they happen, when they're most likely to happen, and in answering the million-dollar question, what we as parents can do when they happen. Recognizing that toddler tantrums are an almost inevitable experience in the parenting journey, it's reassuring to know that we now have a few pointers to help us deal with temper tantrums using a professional, evidence-based, and hopefully effective approach. For all that fantastic advice, I'd like to once again thank Warren Kan for his valuable contribution to the program, while also taking this opportunity to thank you all for your company this afternoon. I look forward to reconnecting with you soon on another episode of the show. Until then, please take care and have a wonderful evening.